the podcast from Belmont Chapel in Exeter, sharing the story, living the life. For more information, go to belmontchapel.org.uk.
Welcome to week 6 in our Exodus series, From Captivity to Covenant. This week, Facebook flagged up to me a post I wrote 9 years ago. So clearly the team at Facebook HQ has spent time and effort to create an algorithm, a computer program, to identify suitable memories it thinks I need to revisit. Now I certainly do believe that remembering and revisiting our memories is a really important part of being human, since our memories help shape our identity and behaviour. This is why dementia is such an awful illness. Caring for my godmother as she progressed through increasing levels of dementia was like slowly losing someone I had known for almost 50 years. As her memory disappeared, so did she. What we remember helps to frame who we are. But clearly Facebook's algorithm is rubbish because I had no interest in the memory it flagged up. However, its failure to choose a relevant memory got me thinking about the Bible. I wonder how helpful it is for us to think of the Bible as a book of memories. Memories chosen by God, not by some algorithm. God's people, under the influence of the Holy Spirit, wrote, reviewed, and identified key memories describing the activities of God and humans leading up to, surrounding, and following on from the life, death, and resurrection of Jesus. Memories chosen to help form our individual and communal identities and reveal God's relationship to his creation. Now, this way of understanding the Bible may be particularly helpful when we read the narrative stories. Narratives often do not give clear instructions or teaching. They tend to describe events, circumstances, and situations that the people of God experienced. But if we believe God chose deliberately to include them in the Bible, then they must be there for a good reason. And so, with this in mind, let us now turn to the book of Exodus and the plague narrative we are exploring tonight. Last week, James helpfully covered an awful lot of ground. So if you missed his talk, then I recommend listening to it via the Belmont website or podcast. I don't know if any questions popped into your head in response to what he said last week. One which popped into my head was, why did God choose to use the 10 plagues to set his people free? You see, by the third plague, the plague of gnats, God had already demonstrated he was more powerful than the Egyptian magicians. Listen to Exodus chapter 8, verses 18 and 19. But when the magicians tried to produce gnats by their secret arts, they could not. Since the gnats were on the people and animals everywhere, the magician said to Pharaoh, "This is the finger of God." So why aren't there just 4 plagues, with the plague of the firstborn following next? It would certainly bring about the exit from Egypt sooner and reduce the suffering of the Israelites. Why 10 then? Well, to help answer my question, I reread the first few chapters again this week and found a passage which explained why God sent the plagues in the first place. Exodus chapter 3, verse 8. So I, this is God speaking, have come down to rescue them, the Israelites, slaves, from the hand of the Egyptians and to bring them out of that land into a good, spacious land flowing with milk and honey. Here we learn that the purpose was to rescue the Israelites. But I was not convinced that this explains why God used 10 plagues rather than 4. And a little later in Exodus chapter 7, verses 4 to 5, I found more information. Then I will lay my hand on Egypt, and with mighty acts of judgment I will bring out my divisions, my people, the Israelites. And the Egyptians will know that I am the Lord when I stretch out my hand against Egypt and bring the Israelites out of it. Okay, so sending the plagues is not just about rescue. It's also about teaching the Egyptians who the God of the Israelites was. The plagues help reveal God's character and nature. Well, actually, the book of Exodus goes on further to tell us that the purpose of the plagues was not just about the Egyptians learning about God. Listen to what God tells Moses to say before the seventh plague of hail. Then the Lord said to Moses, "Get up early in the morning, confront Pharaoh and say to him, 'This is what the Lord, the God of the Hebrews, says. Let my people go so that they may worship me. Or this time I will send the full force of my plagues against you and against your officials and your people, so that you may know that there is no one like me in all the earth. For by now I could have stretched out my hand and struck you and your people with a plague that would have wiped you off the earth. But I have raised you up for this very purpose, that I might show you my power, and that my name might be proclaimed in all the earth.'" It seems that God has multiple purposes for using 10 plagues: rescue and revelation. Rescuing the Israelites and revealing God's power to all the nations. And James reminded us last week that through the plagues, God utterly defeats the superpower of the region. In the words of Walter Brueggemann, "The power, prestige, wealth and wisdom of Egypt all collapse. It is as if the plagues expose the Pharaoh as an emperor who has no clothes." James went on to point out that we certainly see the revelation of God's power increasing as the plagues progress. The Egyptian magicians cannot match God's power beyond the second plague. Only the Egyptians suffer from the fourth plague onwards, with God protecting his own people. Economic destruction increases as the Egyptian livestock dies in the fifth plague. And human life itself is lost from the eighth plague onwards. And alongside increasing physical death and economic destruction, we see the God of the Israelites winning a cosmic battle. Many of the plagues are attacks on the power and control of the Egyptian gods. For example, Nut, the sky goddess, could not prevent the killer hail. Ra, the sun god, is defeated by the plague of darkness. So the plagues reveal that before the God of the Israelites, all other gods are powerless. Nothing can stand before him. So I thought I'd found my answer. By using the 10 plagues, God not only rescued the Israelites, but he also revealed his character and power to Egypt and the other nations. But reading on, I came to realize that there was an additional group which God wanted to reveal his character and nature to as well: future generations of Israelites. Let me read Exodus 10, verses 1 and 2 to you. "Then the Lord said to Moses, 'Go to Pharaoh, for I have hardened his heart and the hearts of his officials, so that I may perform these signs of mine among them, that you may tell your children and grandchildren how I dealt harshly with the Egyptians and how I performed my signs among them, and that you may know that I am the Lord.'" The 10 plagues were not only signs to Egypt and the other nations that God was all-powerful. They were signs and are signs to his own people. So why did the Israelites themselves need these signs? I think it was because the Israelite slaves had forgotten what their God was like, and God knew that later generations could also forget. If we look back in chapters 5 and 6, we read that the Israelite slaves are a discouraged people. They don't seem to believe that Moses was God's agent of change. Life has just got worse, not better, after Moses had asked Pharaoh to let the people go. Let me read what they say to Moses after hearing they now had to find their own straw to make bricks. When they left Pharaoh, they found Moses and Aaron waiting to meet them. And they said, "May the Lord look on you and judge you. You have made us obnoxious to Pharaoh and his officials and have put a sword in their hand to kill us." Then, despite God himself reminding all the Israelites about his covenant promise in the past to Abraham, telling them that he will remain faithful and fulfill his promise, their attitude did not improve. God tells Moses, "Therefore, say to the Israelites, I am the Lord, and I will bring you out from under the yoke of the Egyptians. I will free you from being slaves to them, and I will redeem you with an outstretched arm and with mighty acts of judgment. I will take you as my own people, and I will be your God. Then you will know that I am the Lord your God, who brought you out from under the yoke of the Egyptians. And I will bring you to the land I swore with uplifted hand to give to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob. I will give you as a possession. I am the Lord. Moses reported this to the Israelites, but they did not listen to him because of their discouragement and harsh labor. The Israelites' present circumstances seem to have overwhelmed their memory of God's past activity and covenantal promises. They appear to have no expectation that God was interested in them. After all, they are still in Egypt. They are still slaves. The Pharaoh is still in charge. So God reminds the Israelites of his character and nature through the 10 plagues and tells them to retell these events to future generations so that future generations do not make the same mistake as the Israelite slaves. By looking backwards and retelling the narrative, future generations could move forwards with their God. The people of God who live after the time of the Exodus can have hope whatever their future circumstances, because the God who is with them in their present circumstances is the same all-powerful God of Exodus, the same faithful covenant-forming God, the same steadfast loving God of their past, the same redeeming God, the same rescuing God. Since God's character and nature does not change, then if he acted in the past, then he can act again in the present. By remembering the past, the people can walk in faith in the present. Walter Brueggemann summarizes it well, what faith and hope can achieve. The aim of the teaching is that Israel, generation after generation, may know the Lord. Where such retelling occurs, there is the offer of hope and obedience, the ingredients of an alternative life of freedom, of justice, and finally shalom. So the 10 plagues we find recorded in the book of Exodus were signs to the future people of God, encouraging them to trust him. They therefore serve as signs to us, the people of God today in the 21st century. I do not know what the near future holds for you or for me. For us as a community of God's people in Exeter, we're certainly living through difficult times globally. But if you're finding life hard at the moment, then may I encourage you to look backwards and remember that in our changing circumstances, there is one certainty. God has not changed. The same God of the Exodus narrative walks with you, walks with me, walks with us today. The same all-powerful God of Exodus, the faithful covenant-forming God, the steadfast loving God of the past, the redeeming God, the rescuing God. By looking backwards, we can walk forwards in faith. So how can we look back and retell effectively? Some of us naturally have better memories than others. But it may also be that some of us have better memorizing and recalling strategies. At this time of year, normally, students are preparing for their university GCSE and A-level exams, and I know things are slightly different this year. When I was teaching, I used to remind my students that reading and listening are the least efficient ways of learning or remembering. By adding visuals to notes improves our chance. Adding discussion and interaction improves our chance even more of remembering and learning. And teaching others is the best way of learning and of remembering. So strangely, rightly or wrongly, I am probably getting the most out of this talk. I will remember more than you. Sorry. What research suggests is that the more senses we use in an activity and the more interactive we make it, then the more likely we are to remember and to communicate it well. Perhaps it is therefore not surprising that, as we shall hear in 2 weeks' time, God told his people to hold a festival as an annual way of communally remembering the Passover event. they are told to hold a regular multisensory event to emphasize, remember, and to pass on to future generations the significance of the Exodus event. God gave his people events to help them remember their past in order to build up hope for their future. And as long as the people remember, they will be able to walk by faith. If they forget, then their faith will run dry. And many of the Old Testament narratives reveal the people of God both remembering or forgetting the character of God. And so at times they are moving forwards, walking with God, and at other times they're wandering around in circles, literally ignoring God. And of course, you will be well aware that Jesus himself looked back to the first Passover and used the Passover festival to explain to his disciples that his death would redeem damaged, estranged, sinful humanity. Jesus presented himself as the new Passover lamb, killed to redeem creation, to set it free from its slavery to death, sin, and the devil. In doing so, he also transformed the Passover meal, turning the multisensory remembering event into something new, in order to help future generations remember the events of the first Easter. And the events surrounding the cross are so important to Christian identity. We don't remember it once a year, but we gather together and remember it regularly every week when we can. Communion itself helps us to look backwards in order to move forwards, to remember our God is an all-powerful rescuing God, to keep reminding us the faithful covenant-forming God, the steadfast loving God, that God is unchanging, who acted in the past and continues to act today. And I love celebrating communion because it builds community. It reminds us all what we have in common. It helps us to remember that God is still walking with us day by day as his Spirit continues to talk and guide us through life. Now, alongside communion, I wonder which other ways I use regularly to look back and remember God's character-revealing activities in the past and retell them to ourselves and our children and the wider church family. God's activities remembered and recorded in the Bible. God's activities remembered and recorded in church history. God's activities remembered and recorded in our own lives and in modern times. God's character and nature have not changed. He is the same yesterday, today, and will be tomorrow. Now, our different personalities and spiritualities may mean that we find different ways to look back, different ways to remember the activity and teachings of God, different ways of maintaining hope and building faith, different ways of retelling. Some people I know like to journal, recording their thoughts, answered prayers, key Bible texts that have spoken to them. Over time, these journals become full of memories which we can return to find encouragement and to strengthen faith, to tell others about. Now, since the Bible is the authoritative collection of memories of the people of God, memories chosen by God through the work of the Holy Spirit, then we need to find ways to read it regularly. For some, that will be through reading a daily devotional. For others, it will be listening to a daily devotional app. Others may prefer to join a regular Bible discussion group or watch sermons and talks online. We can use our different senses and different activities to look backwards to build hope in the present. Those who are very creative might use colour and image a lot more than others. Some people are quite happy to sit and to read or to just listen. Organisations like the Bible Project use animation to help people look backwards in order to move forwards. We can also find it helpful to hear how God has been at work in the lives of others. I wonder which ways you use to do this. Do you enjoy reading biographies of Christians, reading how God was faithful to them in the past? Is your inbox or letterbox full of newsletters from Christian organisations explaining how the same God of the past is working in the present through them? Do you enjoy attending conferences when allowed, meeting and listening to talks, presentations? Why not remind yourself this week which ways work best for you, helping you to remember the character and nature of God? Are there particular stories of God's faithfulness from the Bible, your own past, or the lives of past generations which stir up hope in you? Why not explore a different way, a way you've not tried before, which could help you remember? Or share ideas with each other about which way works for you. This evening, as we look ahead to the start of another week, as society continues to open up here, as life reorganizes itself, I do not know what highs or lows you yourself will encounter in the coming days, but I do know that the plague narrative we have reflected on tonight has reminded us all that the same all-powerful God of Exodus, the faithful covenant-forming God, the steadfast loving God, the redeeming God, the rescuing God, walks with us through each day. And may this knowledge be a great encouragement to you as your alarm rings tomorrow and you awaken to a new day.